Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Thank you for doing that, Ron. Thank you for fixing up those hymns. I say thank you for marking those hymns.
So I'm not going to be in your way here, though?
What's that?
I'm not going to be in your way?
Not at all.
Okay.
If I back up and step on your foot, try not to yell. And will you join me now in the lighting of the chalice? And it... Ready? We light this chalice for the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the energy of action we gather together in this circle of humanity. Maybe we unite our spirits in a time of meditation. Our spirits are heavy with the cries of the injured, of the wails of disbelief of ordinary folk like ourselves, seeking the lost among the meaningless chaos, rocking their beloved in a kind of amazement, still and bloodied in their arms. How here? How now? In this time? For us, these are but sounds and sights. Do we struggle to unite our humanity with these, like us, a futile reaching out from our place to such heartless noise and scene before it passes? And how then shall we hold what has taken us so briefly? Fearful, helpless. To those who lead and govern, let us call them from the cowardliness of their safe redoubts. Cry, enough. Let us unite in silence. From the inventor of the wood stove, Benjamin Franklin, diplomat, composer, publisher, man about town, lover. But today I want to speak of another aspect of Franklin's life that is important to us, and that is his religion. Mr. Franklin's religion. And the first thing to be said is that Benjamin Franklin was not a Unitarian. And, well, you never said he was, did you? I don't know, you might have. You might be among those who, by good and loyal attention, collect the names of famous Unitarians to put on T-shirts and teacups, hoping for legitimacy by association. Among others claimed for our faith are the second president of the United States, John Adams, his wife Abigail, their son, the sixth president, John Quincy Adams, and of course, eventually, electioneering the close friend of John Adams, Thomas Jefferson. Now, were these famous leaders of our nation really Unitarians? Well, much depends on what is meant by the term Unitarian. We know that Jefferson once said that every thoughtful person would become a Unitarian within his lifetime. And that would have been universally fortunate. But what did Jefferson mean? He himself was not a Unitarian by church membership. He was a member of the Episcopal Church throughout his lifetime. What he meant by Unitarian, quite simply, was that he disbelieved in the orthodox Christian doctrine of the Trinity. And unfortunately, too many of us still define ourselves by what we do not believe. He believed rather that God is one, that Jesus was neither God nor one of three gods in one. When it came to doctrine, Jefferson, like so many of his esteemed contemporaries, was uni rather than trini. Jefferson wrote to John Adams in 1830, "It is too late in the day of society for people of sincerity to believe in the Platonic mysticisms that three are one and one are three, and yet that one is not three and three not one. But this constitutes the power in the craft and the profit of the priests. In another letter to a minister, Benjamin Waterhouse, Jefferson wrote, "The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend to all the happiness of humankind. But compare these with the demoralizing dogmas of John Calvin." And that's to be said with a sneer. And he then had proceeded to list those demoralizing dogmas of Calvin. One, that there are three gods. Two, that good works or the love of our neighbor is of nothing. That faith is everything. And the more incomprehensible the proposition, the more that merit the faith. That reason in religion is of unlawful use. And that God, from the beginning, elected certain individuals to be saved and others to be damned. And that no crimes of the former can damn them, and no virtues of the latter can save them. It is said that if one wants a thing done right, one should do it oneself. And Jefferson was so convinced in his belief that he did precisely that, he created his own Bible by going through the standard Bible of the day, literally cutting out all the texts he believed to be superstitious rubbish. The Jefferson Bible is still being published. John Adams and John Quincy Adams, well, again, they were Unitarians. Again, in that they were not Trinitarians. But the fact is that though there were no congregations in late 18th century in New England in which the heresy was preached, there was no organized Unitarian institution, no denomination, no formal entity to be a member of until the formation of the American Unitarian Association in 1825. And of course, that was in the Boston area. So, to be humble, as befits a people of rational faith, we should list our pre-1825 famous people as Unitarians with a small U, denoting not what they were, but what they believed. As for Benjamin Franklin, who is, after all, the subject here, the only reference I have been able to find is linking him to Unitarianism is one writer's notation that Benjamin Franklin might have had some interest in it. And that it ought to be looked into. To the best of my knowledge, it was not. Franklin's interest, if at all, would have come through his contact with Joseph Priestley, a Unitarian clergyman in England, and a fellow scientist, the discoverer of oxygen, who escaped the English mobs, who themselves, good Christian folk, considered him a heretic, threatened to kill him, and burned down his laboratory. Well, what was then Franklin's religion? Well, it was decidedly Unitarian, with a small U. That is, most of us contemporary Unitarian Universalists would be quite comfortable in having him in our midst. But if one were to label him, one would have to say that he was a deist of sorts, as were many of the founders of the American experiment. Among the founders of the new nation were deists Samuel Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, James Madison, and Ethan Allen, famous for founding furniture stores all over America. That is not true. Now, the deists were creatures of the Enlightenment. They were born of rationalism. They were free thinkers who turned their backs on traditional religion and orthodox Christian doctrine and dogma. Franklin would have found it immensely entertaining that in recent years he, with other founders, has been portrayed by the political and religious right as an orthodox Christian who helped lay the foundations of a Christian nation. Well, he certainly was by no means an orthodox Christian, nor were the others, for that matter. On the other hand, Franklin was not anti-Christian. He believed that the Christian faith inspired people to be good citizens. And at the same time, he and Jefferson and the Adams and others believed that other religions did the same thing. In Franklin's view, religion, any religion, was a good thing. And I'm reminded of President Eisenhower's statement about religion. Eisenhower said, religion is a good thing, and I don't care what it is. But the deist perspective was a far cry from anything of the contemporary religious right would recognize as being Christian, and that the Christian faith gave people courage in trying times was what could be said for him. The deist believed that God is creator of the universe, the architect of natural order. However, the God recognized by the deist took no interest in human affairs and favored not one individual over another, and certainly not one nation over another. For the deists, there may indeed be a God, but at best, their God was an absentee landlord. Some deists, in fact, though not Franklin, held to the watchmaker theory of creation, that the earth and everything in it was created by God, but that God then either ceased to exist or ceased to be interested in his creation. This was in response to those who compared the order of creation to the order of a fine watch, claiming that the existence of the watch assumed a watchmaker. Indeed, it does, said the deists, but it does not prove that the watchmaker still lives, or that if he does, that he is good, that he is evil, or that he is indifferent. Speaking of John Adams, Adams was one of Benjamin Franklin's contemporaries who had little use for him, actually, and meant him no compliment when he said about Franklin's religious views that the Catholics thought him almost a Catholic, The Church of England claimed him as one of theirs. The Presbyterians thought him half a Presbyterian, and the Quakers believed him to be a Quaker. No doubt the fact that no one today is quite sure exactly what Dr. Franklin's beliefs were would please him immensely. He liked to keep people guessing. Adams thought him inconsistent, a waffler. But then Ralph Waldo Emerson, who definitely was a Unitarian, said, "A foolish consistency is a hobgoblin of little minds." I say that Franklin was a deist of sorts, but again, he was never wholeheartedly in any one religious camp or another. Even in the realm of politics, he was one of the last of the founders to reluctantly declare that the colonies must separate from Britain. Like other deists, Franklin's faith was, as Isaacson puts it in his excellent biography, Franklin's religion was devoid of sectarian dogma, of burning spirituality, of deep soul searching, or of a personal relationship to Christ. Unlike the deists, however, in religion, he was utilitarian. That is, he believed that religion was useful, good for people, good for society, good for hanging together the social contract. And unlike the deist, Franklin believed that God is interested in human affairs and that God desires not worship, but good deeds. The problem with deism, he thought, was that it gave people no guides to morality. They gave them no reason to be good. Franklin's God did not need nor praise or flattery, but did delight in and in fact required that human beings do what is good. He believed, in short, in the heresy of salvation by good works. Siding not with the Puritans or the Calvinists of his day, but with the Apostle James, who said, "By their works you shall know them." Franklin wrote, "I think vital religion has always suffered when orthodoxy is more regarded than virtue. And the scripture assures me that on the last day we shall be examined not by what we thought, but by what we did, that we did good for our fellow creatures." Now, Franklin and the deists were very much against the tide in this. After all, the Protestant Reformation decidedly damned the Catholic doctrine that people are saved by their works. Early Catholicism was grounded in the assumption that the ignorant masses were not capable of faith. Whereas the battle cry of the Lutheran reformers was sola fides, by faith alone. Martin Luther's protest was against doing and all for being and believing. During the Presbyterian heresy trial of the Reverend Samuel Hemphill, who was accused of preaching too much about good works, and not enough about faith and doctrine and dogma. Franklin wrote, "A virtuous heretic shall be saved before a wicked Christian." And now, while he financially supported the Presbyterian minister in his own town, again simply because he believed religion to be socially useful, Franklin only attended services 4 or 5 times that we know of. The minister there, he said, was more interested in making good Presbyterians than in making good citizens. Giving up in disgust, he stayed home on Sundays and read the newspaper. And if he didn't find a newspaper he liked or agreed with, if you don't like the way something is done, do it yourself, he published his own newspapers. And the religious awakening in America in the 18th century sought to return America, the states, to the pietism of the Puritans, mostly through hellfire and brimstone preaching, such as that of Jonathan Edwards. Franklin's religiosity had a different goal: to bring America into the age of enlightenment, an age that would raise up tolerance, individual merit, good deeds, and rationality in religion and civic life. Dr. Franklin was tolerant and supportive of any faith that resulted in good works. By their works you shall know them. He wrote, "I mean real good works." Franklin wrote in a letter, "Works of kindness, of charity, of mercy, and public spirit, not holiday keeping, sermon reading, or hearing, performing church ceremonies, or making long prayers filled with flatteries and compliments. The worship of God is a duty," Franklin wrote. "The hearing and the reading of sermons may be useful, but if people do not do good deeds also, it is as if a tree should value itself on being watered and putting forth leaves, though it never produced any fruit." So much for sermons. Of Jesus, Benjamin Franklin's beliefs were again tolerant and utilitarian and Unitarian. For him, the human Jesus teachings were divinely inspired. But if one chose to believe that Jesus was the Christ, a divine being, well, Franklin said that's all right too, as long as such belief led to a life of good works. He wrote, "As to Jesus of Nazareth, I think his system of morals and his religion, as he left them with us, it is the best the world ever saw or is likely to see." And again, I remind you that he only left in the Bible things that fit that definition. "But I apprehend," he continued, "that it has received various corrupting changes, and I have, with most personal present disasters in England, I have some doubts as to his divinity. Though it is a question I do not dogmatize upon, having never studied it," Franklin wrote, "and I think it needless to busy myself with it now, when I expect soon an opportunity of knowing the truth with less trouble. I see no harm, however, he wrote, in its being believed, if belief has good consequences, as it probably has, of making his doctrines more respected and observed. He went on to say, excuse me, that he saw no evidence that the unbelievers of the world bore any particular marks of the Supreme Being's displeasure with them. Heretics seemed to him to be no more or less welcome in God's world than true believers. In short, Benjamin Franklin was largely disinterested in debates about the divinity of humanity of Jesus, his miraculous birth, or his equally miraculous resurrection. His interest in this and in other religious questions was confined to whether or not and to what extent one's religious beliefs, Christian, Jewish, Hindu, or what have you, were expressed in how one lives one's life. Ironically, perhaps, Benjamin Franklin would have been among the last to care much about whether we claimed him or proclaimed him to have been a Unitarian. As I mentioned earlier, there is some indication that he once indicated some interest in Unitarianism, but so far, no one has been able to make much of it. Still, we've added our names, his names, to our T-shirts and our dish towels. And at times, I find it just a little embarrassing that we seem to resort to such name-dropping. As if we feel it important to justify the oddness of our faith by pointing out to real or imagined detractors and smirkers that some famous people believed as we believe. I have yet to see a T-shirt with the names of famous Baptists appliqued upon it, nor have I heard any Methodist proudly proclaim that President Rutherford B. Hayes was one of theirs. Still, I think it's important that we be reminded from time to time that Unitarian ideas have been around for some considerable time, and that those ideas have had some considerable effect on the course of human history. It is important that we be reminded that our principles of freedom and toleration, the use of reason, openness to opinion, and compassion for and service to our fellow human beings were the principles that not only forged a free faith in America, but forged a free nation. It is not so important that many of the makers of this magnificent experiment were or were not identifiably Unitarian, but that they held dear those uncommon religious ideas which inspired a common people to be free. Those who gather to affirm and promote those ideas in the present, perhaps have a special calling to assure that those principles are preserved and perpetuated and not whittled away as we stand by. For we, like our forebears and like this nation's founders, believe these truths to be self-evident. Amen. And will you join me now, please, in the extinguishing of the chalice? We extinguish the flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the energy of action burn bright in our hearts until we are there again. And for those who see God, may God bless you. For those who mind truth and the good life, may truth and the good life return your affection. Amen.